If you thought the sell-off in the last 15 minutes of the session was a precursor to a four-day losing streak, wrong. Buy the Dippers came in the last minute and they've been bidding all night long. Maybe they like the Merck drug news. That might be the biggest move in Merck I've ever seen. We'll analyze the price action in that. Carnival Cruise Line has some earnings. GME, not so good on its earnings front. Tim Seymour, 835. We'll figure out what's going on in the marijuana sector. It's hump day. It's Wednesday. It's pre-market prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, team, up 18 handles, 52.83 and a quarter. Never even sniffed that closing price of 65 and a quarter. The buck down 4 pennies, trying to get in a 104 handle, 103.95. Bonds up a quarter point. It's about the third day in a row I've said that at 119 and 26, 30 seconds. Crude quiet down 35 cents, 81.27. Gold over 2,200, up 970, 22.09.10. Silver, laggard, up a couple pennies, 24.64. In Bitcoin, that's in the 70K handle. That's up $735 at $70,945. Let's bring in Triple D here and see if he's recovered from daylight saving.
No, I haven't. This is ridiculous. Oh, like, when do you actually, like, right? I always wake up 6:30, no problems at all. Now I'm sleeping in past 7. And I swear, this is all because of daylight savings time. I just haven't adjusted yet. When do you actually adjust? It feels like it's been a month.
A day.
When was it? 2 weeks ago?
A day.
A day. Not me. Yeah. I take a month to adjust. So, honestly, I'm in the vote. Maybe I just got to move to Arizona where they don't have daylight savings time anymore. But then I'd have to get up really early. So maybe I should actually move the other way so I don't have to get up so early. I guess I'm not a morning person.
All right, let's bring in AB, who probably doesn't wear a watch, probably never looks at the clock. He's just going 24/7 working for Benzinga. He's a youngster. He doesn't, what do you get? Like 3-4 hours of sleep
all
a night?
Need.
I try to get a little bit more than that some nights, but I'm with Dennis right now. I'm sleeping in the basement of my friend's house, so it's like extra dark. And this morning it was like, I'm waking up and it's super dark, and I actually thought about you, Dennis. I was like, it's probably me and Dennis are the only people still dealing with this time.
You can't adjust to daylight savings time.
No, but Joel, come on now. I wear an Apple Watch. I'm like you. I need it. You know why I need the Apple Watch the most is because when I'm swimming, I'm too dumb to keep track of once
it's
I get
nice. It's nice to keep track of. It is nice. It's nice. I've done some distance swims lately, and it's nice not to be able to count. It's
right.
Just nice to let it go.
I would always get to like 52, 53, and then like on my next lap, I'm like, wait, am I on 60 now? I have no clue where I'm at. Now I can just check my watch, although it is kind of hard to check it while you're swimming. So I always got to, then I got to stop, and then I check it, then I'm out of my groove. But all right, let's get to the markets this morning. The title today is Market on Drugs. Usually I'm an expert on everything we talk about. I don't know anything about drugs, guys, but we have Merck today. A big move in a company like Merck, which usually doesn't move, too much. It's usually more of a slow-moving stock. But the company did. The FDA approved Merck's drug for a rare deadly lung condition. So there's about 40,000 people in the U.S. living with this disease for pulmonary or arterial hypertension. I think I'm saying that right. I'm not sure.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah. Pulmonary, I know I'm right on the arterial, one of the two. I don't know, but 40,000 people. So it seems like it's not even that big of a market opportunity. But a lot of times when companies put out a drug for one of these like rare deadly diseases where there's no cure for, they do get a nice pop. So you're seeing Merck trading higher. We do have other news in the drug space, but let's stick to Merck for now. What do you guys think about this move?
Well, it's been a stock that has lagged, if you're comparing to Lilly or any of the other, drugs that are obviously in the obesity trade. It hasn't really done much, but it's held up. I mean, valuation on Merck has always been somewhat reasonable, a lot lower than a stock like Lilly here. And I've argued that they needed to figure out, how to get in this obesity trade. But maybe if they're going to get these drugs approved for these rare diseases here. Maybe they got their own thing that they're cooking here. Stock is in a breakout. This is actually, I believe, an all-time high.
Oh, yeah.
So we're breaking out through the 130. Let's see, you know, what you need to do when you're buying a breakout. What the critical thing is that the stock keeps breaking out. If you get like it opens at 131.5 and then starts trading below 130, that's not what you want to see on a breakout, because the 130 is the breakout number here. If you're buying a breakout, you need to see it keep breaking out. So just be careful when you're trading breakouts, because breakouts can become fakeouts. It's just a big move for Merck. And maybe this is going to be the move, you know, that's going to continue to drive it. But a 5% move for Merck is a big move for Merck.
Oh, man. I could just look at the average daily range. I don't even need to look at it. I mean, going back over the last...
It was a buck.
Yeah. Yesterday, it was like a buck and a quarter. That was the range yesterday. This moving six times as much. Do you still have this one, Triple D? Because I have this.
I had Merck a long time on my long-term portfolio. I got rid of it. Oh, man. I think around $100 or something. I had bought this back again when I bought my Lilly, and I bought this back. I think it was like $50 or $60. It might have even been less than that. It might have been $30. I bought a number of years ago. Had it in the portfolio for a lot of years. It was a good one. It was paying me a 5% dividend, obviously that dividend's dropped substantially because the stock has gone up. And, you know, it was giving me some capital appreciation. Merck and Lilly were two good stocks in my long-term portfolio for a very long time. I just felt like they had run and had their run. And, you know, they did cool off a little bit. But then, obviously, the Lilly trade got ignited by the obesity drug. Obviously, you know, buying and holding maybe works better sometimes in your long-term portfolio than looking at it and thinking, well, that's enough money.
I'm just going to give you a number one lesson here, okay?
Yes, in this please stock, do.
Okay? Because I remember buying this, and if you look at the monthly here, I know exactly when I bought it. I bought it right in late 21, and I remember buying it at $85. And I looked at it at the end of the next month, and I said, I'm not going to look at it anymore.
Sometimes the best thing to do.
It went down like 10, 15 bucks, never added to it. And then if I was ever thinking of selling it, it would be today, but I'm not going to sell it. Pre-market high, 132.25. I mean, if anything, Dennis, I mean, how many, I know you don't have your New York book anymore, but I mean, it's traded 300,000 shares. If this thing opens up over 132,
I think it can.
It can. If it opens over 133, I will walk on my hands down the line.
Don't say it to the
office.
Things open wherever the hell they want to open. And sometimes you get some crazy moves. And though it's not absurd to think, you're just saying that there's going to be some orders in the book that may hold down the opening print. And that might be accurate. And maybe it's going to be a buy off of that. But I don't know. This is not an AI stock. This is not an obesity stock. This is a stock that's obviously had a drug approved. It's a big move for Merck. So just giving a perspective.
Huge.
I'm not sure I'm coming in and chasing this one. We'll say that.
So put some more.
If I had 125 weeklies or anything, I'd be like sell.
Sell short the stock against your weeklies. And remember, folks, you know, I say this about once every couple of months. When you're long options and you're like, oh, I wish I could sell my options right now. Remember, you can always short the stock against your call option and lock in the price. I mean, if you're long the 125 calls, you can short the stock in the pre-market at 131.70 or 131.65 right now and lock yourself in the $6.50. Now, you know, maybe you don't want to do that. If you're long longer dated calls, you probably don't, because you're giving up time value on that trade. But I mean, it's not only that, you short the stock against it. If it comes in, then you can actually participate in the downside if it started to really fall. But there's lots of different ways to play it. It's too many people just, you know, buy options. And I mean, if you're buying options at Robinhood and they don't allow you to short stocks, they don't even give you that option. And maybe this is a good segue. I know I don't want to go to Robinhood maybe right away, but it is another storied stock today. But, you know,
let's stay on drugs. Let's go.
It was going to be a great segue, though. It was going to be a great segue.
Oh, really?
But we'll burn it. We'll burn it down.
No.
Stay on the drugs, Moderna.
Do the segue, Dennis. Now I feel bad.
Yeah, let's go back to the segue. Restart. Reverse. Let's act like
going to the segue, and I don't even remember what the segue was. What I was saying is, instead, maybe Tanev should stop worrying about so much about credit cards and all the other things, and maybe should allow his people. And again, maybe they have already, but I don't think they have. Maybe they just should get a better lender and they should actually allow them to short stocks at Robinhood. Why? Question to the chat. You guys are all have Robinhood. Why are they not allowed to short stocks at Robinhood? I don't understand. It's not that difficult. Like, this is a professional brokerage here. Why don't they allow them to short stocks at Robinhood? Because you miss out on all these strategies. If you are long calls, short stocks against it to hedge yourself up. I mean, there's so many different, like, people think shorting is evil. It is just a lot of, like, I use shorting primarily as hedging tactics. I mean, if you're running a hedge fund, how do you run a hedge fund? Like, they want me to bring, you know, they keep advertising, bring millions of dollars over there. Oh, yeah, I'm going to bring millions of dollars over there. I'm running a hedge fund, meaning I'm hedged. I mean, equal longs, equal shorts. So how the hell do I run a hedge fund without shorting stocks? It's not that easy. I mean, you could say, oh, yeah, I'll buy the triple SQQQ, or I'll buy this or buy that. You don't need any of that stuff. Why not just allow people to short stocks? I don't get it. It can't be that hard.
Carmen says Citadel says no.
Citadel says no. That's not true. That's just kidding. Kenny wants you to short stocks. It's more money for him. He wants you to trade more. Yeah, I can't believe Kenny didn't push this more. Kenny wants you in there, man. He wants you buy and sell and shorten. The more you trade, the more Kenny the goat makes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So that was my. So you can take it back if you want to go to Moderna, or we can talk Robinhood because of doing credit cards.
Let's we got Hood's chart up. Let's stick with Hood for a second. I mean, Hood has been on a tear recently, now above $20 a share. This thing was what, an $8? No, wow, it got down to $5 at one, or no, hold on, my chart's all screwed up. But it got down to, you know, low single digits at one point, or $8 in October 2023. That. Yeah, lower than that. But yeah, the company held a keynote event last night where it announced some new things, including a real gold credit card. Users can get a credit card from Robinhood that's like actual gold. It reminds me of when the Apple card first came out, which was like a real cool metal card. And I actually got it because I thought it was like super cool. And then, you know, the buzz kind of wore off after having it for a few days and it was too heavy in my pocket. So I had to get rid of it. But Robinhood has been announcing a lot of new features recently. A new 3% cashback gold card. I mean, the stock's up 7% this morning. In addition to this, in the last few months, Robinhood has also announced a 1% match if you transfer a portfolio over to Robinhood. Now, there is a lockup period, but say you have, you know, $1 million. Okay, maybe that's a little too much. Say you have $100,000. But say you have $100,000 at Interactive Brokers and you transfer it to Robinhood. Boom, you just got a free $1,000 from Robinhood. Yeah, free $1,000. Another thing that I like that Robinhood has been doing is if you just have cash sitting in your portfolio, and I think other brokerages are doing this too, though, it'll give you interest payments on the cash. So, like, if I started just getting my check direct deposited to Robinhood, I'd be making more money than getting it deposited in my Bank of America checking account. Now, again, like, these things are all just new features that Robinhood's adding. And, of course, the user data, the transactions have been rising because of crypto's resurgence over the past few months. So you have kind of all these things working together for Robinhood and helping push it back up above $20 a share. I mean, I'm a Robinhood user, to your point, Dennis. I wish we could short stocks on there. I think a lot of people see that you can buy puts on there as like, oh, I can at least get short a little bit, and maybe that helps curb the appetite for it. But I think down the road, you will eventually see Robinhood add that feature as more and more people ask for it.
Well, it's ridiculous that they don't have that feature with this many customers. There's got to be something else behind the scenes that's holding it back. But I mean, every brokerage house, you know, like, you just go to any, you know, like, they all allow shorting, you know, for the most part. Like, Who else doesn't allow shorting of stocks? Maybe some of these other smaller retail platforms.
Does Webull?
I don't know. Like, we know Trade Zero does. You know, they're small. Like there's lots of, you know, different, you know, opportunities out there. I mean, I just think it's so limits. Like, he's focusing on this and that and this and that. That's a simple one. And maybe they just think there's no money in shorting, but I don't know how you hedge. Like, I don't know. How does he expect? And I see this ad all the time, maybe the one you're talking about. 1%, and he says, even bring over $1 billion and we'll give you 1%. Nobody's bringing you $1 billion, Vlad. I tell you, actually, if you're gonna be a hedge fund,
how
you
long
billion
you
dollars, it's probably
how
hedging.
Long you got to keep it there, because, you know,
I think it's like 2 years.
Okay, because I mean, I'm a transfer time. You know, like, you know, a little chunk of change in, get it and then transfer it out, you know. But I guess
I don't get it. I don't get it.
I just want a couple things on this.
It's actually a 3% match on IRA transfers. So that's, I mean, again, if you have like a big IRA, 3% is not nothing.
That's a lot.
You have to keep your Robinhood Gold subscription for at least 1 year after you make the qualifying contribution. So, I mean, again, if you were like, oh, I'm just going to park my IRA and you know, some like bonds or something for the year, take my 5%, then you get the extra 3% from Robinhood for the year, and then you want to transfer it back. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of free money on the table, but it does seem like a lot of work. And again, like, you got to do that lockup period. But
somebody said E-Trade doesn't allow shorting. That's not right, is it? No way. E-Trade must. It's been out for so many years.
I just want to just talk just real quickly about this one. And just like, I can remember, I think I really screwed this one up. I think I tried to buy it with odds. This is a long time ago. Because all these analysts were lower. Like, I'm looking at a point here on my pro, and I can move it over here. You know, because analysts, you know, we talk about them being right and being wrong. I mean, look at all these people lowering their price target. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row, 6 lowered price targets. When they say, I think someone even came out with a sell rating on it or something. And I remember, I'm like, oh, this is a fade. And I don't know. I think I did it too short term. We'll just give you the current action here. It's up $1.37. The pre-market high comes in at 21.25. This is great. This is a move over 20. You have a bit over 20 since the end of 2021. Don't know how that price action is going to play out today longer term, but sure would like to see this establish a strong 20 bid. I mean, it's one to be up here today, up $1.40, fly around, hit 21.70, trade down 19.5. But you need people step up here and a bid here at 20 bucks. But pre-market high, 21.25.
Okay, they're getting feisty in there. They want us to stop talking. Let's go back.
They're feisty. Let's go back.
The chat only gives 2 minutes max of stock when we take over 5. And I know what? It's good. They keep us on track. Because we go on tangents. And all I would talk about is, you know, like sports and hockey and, you know, Oilers' big win last night. And so this is good.
You know what I want to talk about?
I hit a parlay last night.
Let's talk about the bridge disaster from yesterday.
Joel, we're all having our own conversation here. Three of us are talking
yesterday, people in the chat were talking about the economic impact of the bridge, and I wanted to hold off on that conversation because they were still looking for people, and you know, and it's like a tragedy. And I don't want to talk about the inflation implications while they're searching for people. But it is a big deal. I mean, people are now talking about our infrastructure again, which I saw a lot of people trying to make it about, like, oh, the structural integrity of the bridge. Look, when you have it crashed into it. Right. You have like a 10-pound truck, right? If like a bus crashes into your house and your house falls down, it's not because your house was, you know, not built properly. It's because a bus crashed into it. So, but you know, I mean, you know, there is some infrastructure, you know, talk and obviously the shipping, you know, that bridge was used for a lot of transport. So people are worried that,
Thank goodness it happened at 1:30 in the morning though, because a lot less traffic. Like imagine this happened in rush hour.
At 7:30 in the morning. Yeah. I mean,
could you imagine? Terrible,
but yeah.
I just have a question. What was it even doing? Like, it's not a drawbridge, right? Like the ship
ran out of power. And then so they weren't supposed to run into the bridge, obviously, but instead of being able to like divert the course or whatever, the boat ran out of power. So it basically did not have the ability to stop it before hitting the bridge, which I hope that means they were able to at least like alert, but I don't know how much time they had.
It wasn't much time. I've read way too much on it. No, they set out at Mayday and it's bad. Okay, let's go back to the other stuff.
Okay, no, you're good. So Moderna, we were talking about drugs. Moderna trading higher this morning too after they have a few different vaccines reaching the primary endpoints in its phase 3 clinical trial. Additionally, Blackstone Life Sciences announced it will invest up to $750 million to support Moderna's influenza program. The company will also host an investor event today. So, I mean, Moderna, like I think this company is really interesting long term because they're, you know, working on a lot of these things that could help with a lot of different diseases. I know people still look at it as just a COVID play. But again, getting a nice balance this morning, and really from a technical perspective, Joel, I'll let you speak on it. But I mean, after we made this bottom down in November 2023, it's been trading pretty well. So again, perking up this morning on positive news from its vaccine reaching phase three. And these are not COVID vaccines. I want to reiterate that. These are other types of vaccines.
When they announce positive stuff for COVID vaccines, they stank them on that now. They're done with COVID.
Yeah, COVID, so. I mean, come on. That's over. That trade's over. You look at Pfizer's chart. You look at – and so that's what I'm saying. I like Moderna as not a COVID play long term. Yeah. But again, I think a lot of people will still always just group this in as a COVID stock. And I mean, out of all the stocks that went crazy during COVID, this was one of the primary ones that got way too high.
Price action. I mean, I've seen this move a lot of times, and a lot of times it gets faded. Don't know if that's going to be the case today. 112.99 is your pre-market high. If that's not good enough here, if you're looking for a longer term level, I really like this 115. You came up just shy in March in it, but that's the high for the year. That was the high back in September. So that room on the upside there. I like the $115 area. The monthly down here doesn't look too bad. It's had a couple green candles. So if you're waiting to buy this on a pullback or you're looking for a gap fill, 111.80 was the top of yesterday's range in Moderna.
I have no comments. Let's move on from drugs because the chat's getting feisty again. So,
all right. Well, let's talk yesterday. Biggest news story of the day, or at least in the markets, was got to be your DWAC to DJT stock. You know, absolutely took off, trading up another 13% pre-market this morning. Dennis, I know you had some, you tweeted last night looking at the locate on Interactive Brokers. I mean, look, like this is just, I don't really know what else to say about this other than you're in complete meme stock territory. You talk about that aren't trading with their valuation. And you know, let's call it what it is. You're basically buying like a meme coin or a meme stock that's not trading with a valuation. It's a way to either bet on Trump if you want to buy it, you know, if you want to buy it to the long side, or bet against it if you want to short it, which you can't on Robinhood. But either way, you know, $66 now. I think what's the valuation at? It's like 15. Pro's telling me 7 billion, but I saw numbers way higher.
Maybe at the highs yesterday when it got to $79. I think it might have been $8 or $9 billion on a company with $3 million in revenue. Well, I don't even know what that is. 300. What is that? 3,000 times sales? I don't even know. I can't even. But it again, this stock, and I definitely got this one wrong because I was thinking this could be a sell the news event that did not happen. They absolutely ripped it on the conversion. Stock went up to 79. I think we topped out yesterday, but when stocks just, you know, disconnect from all valuation, you know, this is like GameStop mode. So who knows where this party ends? We know it probably ends lower when we look at it a year from now, but the path to get there, it's very hard to tell. I do think yesterday everybody got overly excited right off the hop. I do think that $79 is going to be tough to get back up there now. I think you've got a few people maybe caught just because it was a pretty vicious sell-off towards the end yesterday. But with that being said, when stocks disconnect from all valuation, be careful.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, Dennis, like there is probably a big drawdown coming here at some point, but it's just so hard to time. And when you have a stock like this and you have so many people piling in trying to short it, we've seen this story before. So like the easiest and best thing to do is just kind of stay away. But again, if you are going to trade it, just know.
I've made zero trades on this. I have not touched this in the last couple of days. I've traded DWAC before, but I have not touched it since it became DJT. One reason too, I can't get a borrower on IB. I looked already. There's obviously lots of places you can, but in IB, they didn't have inventory yesterday. I'm sure they're going to get it. The borrow also at IB, if you can get it, because I'm sure there's a few people that did get it before they ran out of inventory, 376% a year. So, I mean, shorts are like, this is like people really want this, you know, borrow here. They're paying 376% a year, meaning the stock's got to go to zero in the next 3 months or, you know, you lose money no matter what. So if it stays at 370, it's hard to make money shorting stocks when the borrow rate is 376% a year. It's over 1% a day. So you can be like, oh, wow, what a trade. You know, I just made 1%. No, you didn't make anything because it cost you 1% to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a crazy move. And again, like, someone said in the chat, like, take that same logic to Bitcoin. It basically, I mean, it is. It's like it's trading on nothing. It's basically just all speculation. So it is, you know, you can take that same logic to Bitcoin. What I'm saying is even though I think it's overvalued and silly where it's trading at, not, you know, a sign of an efficient market, that it's the market can stay. What's the quote? People are like, the market can stay inefficient.
Irrational
way
much longer than you can stay solvent.
Right, and exactly.
That's the perfect quote for this stock here right now, too, because the stock is definitely trading, you know, with no fundamentals whatsoever. But we saw before GameStop, when it goes from 10 to 40 to 80 to 350 or wherever the hell it went, before it eventually came back down, and still not all the way back down to where it was. You know, AMC was the same thing, from 2 to 5 to 70. And then, you know, all the way back down to pennies. But I mean, you know, it's hard to hold through when these stocks are in rocket ship mode. So I've said this lots of times. When stocks, you know, are hot, when the story is hot, valuation is meaningless. So story is hot right now. Does it cool off? I think it's going to cool off faster than you think. But again, that story, the Trump stock is hot, at least for a day.
Dennis, if you want something to trade with this, do you see Rumble? I don't know if you've ever traded it, RUM. It's another network. I believe Barstool Sports is on it.
I'm in it right now. So have you ever traded it? I'm in it right now. Only reason I'm in it is because of the reports tonight. So you know how I like to be long stocks.
Have I ever traded it?
I'm in it right now. But again, this is not a trade. This is just, you know, and yesterday worked really well. Rumble had a huge day yesterday. Again, that's core strategy. It's one of my core strategies, folks. Just being long stocks ahead of reports. It's a stupid strategy. Calendar strategy is really what it is. But you know what? Yesterday, Rumble, what was it, up 15%? I mean, there's maybe, you know, everything
was huge
moving.
Move on monster volume, too.
I mean, there's some news. Like, so it's, you know, again, maybe you're lucky with that one. But in some cases, you know, like just being long stocks ahead of reports, I tend to be long them, you know, and most, you know, usually I'm long them overnight. I usually like the stocks overnight. And then, you know, I might get out and then I get back in and get out and get back in. As of right now, at this current time, I'm long it, but usually I sell those things and I'll probably sell it near the open.
I thought you were going to say, oh, that's not in my university of stocks.
I'm in it. And again, to Spinner's point, it was probably up on the Trump stock.
Oh, yeah. I looked at it right away. Yeah.
And there's been a number of these media companies. I mentioned it yesterday, you know, Parler, Gab, Rumble, you know, Truth Social now, that all try to be kind of this alternative to the right social media. And, you know, I think from a business perspective, it's not unfair to say that they haven't, you know, really worked out that well. So, I mean, Truth Social, maybe with all the buzz it's getting now, maybe it'll get a few more users. But still, I mean, 5 million active users, $3 million in revenue, trading at, you know, $7 billion. We'll see. Someone in the chat did say Donald Trump's lockup period was about 6 months in this. So maybe you'll see a lot of shorts coming in right before Donald Trump's lockup period ends, just because it's, you know, he's probably going to have to sell some of this to pay for some of the other stuff. But let's move on from this. I did want to talk about yesterday. NVIDIA was pretty weak yesterday when looking at the overall tech market, closing down 2.5%. We got some more clarity on some of the China chip news. I don't think that helped it, but I think it might have just been some buyer exhaustion here. Do you guys, I mean, Dennis, we talked about this yesterday. If NVIDIA was basically inevitable on the 1000, was yesterday's price action just a short little bump in the road, or is this, you know, potentially kind of a little short term top?
You don't want to see it reverse where it did. And Joel's probably going to talk about that. It got up to the previous day's high and then failed. So you don't ever want to see that. I mean, and it didn't make a new high on the move. So those are two warning signs. I just think the story here is still so early that if I had it on for a trade, would I ring the register? Probably. But I've got it in the long-term portfolio. And you know what? If I sold NVIDIA every time, you know, it started, you know, having a bad candle, like, you know, I would have been out of this 300 points ago. So, you know, the 500 to 600 was pretty easy, but then you had 700, he came down, and then you had the earnings report in there, and you had lots of, you know, times where it's looked like NVIDIA's story is going to roll over, and then it goes down 30, 40, 50 bucks, and they just buy right back up. So I don't know if this is the end of the NVIDIA story. I don't think, I have no crystal ball, but I don't think it is, and that's why I'm continuing to hold my long.
New number, that all-time closing high was made on Monday at 9:50:02. So if you didn't sell it on the way up, you thought, I'm looking good when it hit 963.75, but when it came back down through it, it's a little better number now. But that's really the only thing. It's kind of a double top, but not really. I mean, it's $4 in between. So I think you do have a seller stalking the 965 area. One day we did get up to 974, but that's where I think your seller is congregated now. And then today, if you're looking to wiggle out at that all-time closing high price, that would be 950.02 for that's still $20 away, but the way this puppy moves, you could definitely get that.
Well, we talk about Nvidia and of course the leader of the AI story and the AI trade. But Nvidia, I mean, you know, back to its roots, got big as a graphics card company for gamers, for people that like to build their own computers. And speaking of video games and gamers, we did have GameStop report earnings last night after the close. Sales came in at $1.79 billion, missed the $2 billion estimate. EPS came in at 22 cents, missed the 29-cent estimate. Company says recently undertaken cost reduction measures to improve the efficiency of their operations, including initiatives to reduce headcount during fiscal year 2024. And so, I mean, stock got hit on this. I don't want to say I called it, but I did say yesterday that, you know, if you looked at the past history of GameStop's reports, it tends to move lower, at least in the last few years. So down 18%, $12 now. I mean, I don't know if this story is officially dead or not, but it's feeling closer to dead than it was.
It feels like it's never officially dead, but I mean, the stock's all-time high is $120. You're now $12. You're now down 90% from the all-time highs. And what I've said, when stocks fall 90% from their all-time highs, they usually don't come back. Sometimes they do, but they usually don't. So, I mean, the story here is definitely ice cold. Is it over? Is it going to get ignited again? Are the memesters going to grab it? They try to grab it for a day, and look, they trade again. Being long stocks ahead of reports, wow. From 13 to 1550. I mean, there's big money in that two-day candle there just ahead of the report, and then dump it before it reports. Don't dare hold them through the reports. You know, sometimes you get lucky, but it's more coin flip territory, and obviously in this case, they didn't like it. With that being said, it's GameStop. The memesters will come in. They're like, we're not going to let this thing go down. They're probably going to try to put up a stand or something like that. So I don't know. It's its own story. GameStop, it's its own story. And if I say something negative about it, then they're probably going to be mad because I said it's probably not coming back and everybody believes it's coming back.
Don't look at your Twitter today.
I got five tweets at me already probably with hate.
I was going to give you 1183 just because that was your low back in November. I think people are stalking that number as you only went to 1201. So call 12 theoretical support here. The bottom of yesterday's range, I don't know if we'll see, but I don't know. Let's see. This needs to establish a 13 bid. You did have buyers at 13 three, four, 5 days in a row, but now 13 is going to be resistance, potential support at 12.
Yeah, and just before we move on to from GameStop, I did see unbelievable in the chat, which it's kind of unbelievable. The $1.7 billion in sales is no joke, which I mean, I it might be silly to talk about the fundamentals for a stock like GameStop, but I am surprised by that. You know, I don't game as much as I used to. I still have a PS4 and the PS5 has been out for like 3 years now. But everyone just buys games straight from the console. Now you can just download it straight from your PS4. You don't need to go into GameStop. And in addition to that, it seems like a lot of the popular video games are moving toward this freemium Fortnite model where you can download the game for free and then they make money through in-game purchases. Dennis, I'm sure you know about this from your kids if they're begging you to buy stuff on Roblox or something like that. But you know, you download Fortnite for free and then you pay for skins, etc. Like, I just don't understand really, I guess, where a lot of these sales for GameStop is coming from. I'll have to look into that. But again, if GameStop keeps getting beat up and their sales stay above $1 billion, it could potentially be worth looking at eventually, but I just don't think right now is the time.
Let's look at the valuation here. I mean, you can't look at it on PE because they don't make money, but just looking at sales, it's currently worth $4.73 billion still, $20 million in debt only because they paid a lot of that off, I believe, when they didn't they do some offerings or something? So the debt isn't crazy there anymore. The sales, I mean, you're stretching to get any, like, you know, when you're looking at $1 billion in sales here, you're stretching on a retailer to say that's a cheap stock. It looks,
you know,
really
what this stock
expensive.
Needs. You know what it needs? It needs a person. What person? Ryan Cohen.
Well, that's who's in there, is Ryan Cohen.
Yeah. So,
I mean, it needs Ryan Cohen. I don't know. Maybe it needs not Ryan Cohen. I don't know. But Ryan Cohen's the whole reason this stock went, you know, or is the whole reason that this stock continues to probably hold up.
Is he still in there?
Yeah, he's still running it, isn't he, AB? Isn't he running the whole thing?
I don't know.
Like, he's in there. He's on the board.
I don't know.
Is Ryan Cohen still actively involved in GameStop? I think he is. Okay. I didn't hear otherwise. Well, I'm not 100%.
Cohen is the chairman and CEO of GameStop still.
Yeah, he runs the whole thing. Yeah,
I was confused because I remember he got involved in like Bed Bath & Beyond a few years
ago.
Oh,
yeah, and then he gets out and he's this and he uses his influence. I mean, there's no doubt he's, you know, he treats an ice cream cone and that means buy memesters. I mean, you know, there's definitely some, you know.
The concerning activity,
I would say, around Ryan Cohen. But they've already investigated and looked into him and I'm sure they're still looking into him.
Yeah, well, we said it at the time when he did that Bed Bath & Beyond thing where he invested in it and it got retail traders all into it. And
then sold
him
at the top.
We said that he had like one bullet in the chamber for that. He could do that one time. You do it twice and you're like a dead man. You do it once. Okay, people, you know, people won't forgive him maybe, but they might, you know, kind of forget. But if he does it again, then he has that. And, you know, then the next time he tries to do it, people just aren't going to buy the stock that he gets in. But let's move on from GameStop. See people in the chat asking to move on from that.
Remember he said he was long one thing. What was it? Rumors he was going to buy, wasn't it Nordstrom or something, like a position in that? And the stock, remember, Joel, and it popped like
30 bucks. I think it
popped like 30% just on the rumor that Ryan Cohen was getting involved. It was like, and I don't even think he was. Like, it was just a rumor, but it went from like 20 to 30, like just like that.
Yeah.
This was just crazy. Yep. Like, I mean, at a certain point in time, Ryan Cohen, very influential.
Yeah, 100%. And they
people of influence, he's up there.
At least
in the stock market.
GameStop did announce that, you know, I don't know when this was, like a year or so ago, that they changed company policy and they were going to allow Ryan Cohen to invest with company funds. So maybe that was their like last ditch effort to try to bring in some extra profit. Was like, here, Cohen, here, take our $1 billion in revenue and invest it and try to make some extra money for it. So I don't know if that's still going on or if Cohen is trading, you know, buying and selling meme coins with GameStop funds still. If anyone in the chat has extra clarity on that, let us know. But all right. Let's move on from GameStop, a different type of gaming. DraftKings gambling. Needham maintains buy on DraftKings, raises price target to $58. You've got betting in the news a lot right now. I just saw on CNBC they had their little title on there that said tackling problem gambling. You have this news about Shohei Ohtani. I don't know if you guys have been following that story, but it's a crazy story.
Yeah,
and I don't know what the MLB. Dennis, are you caught up?
I know I the headlines, so I don't dig into all the details. I saw him getting interviewed and talking about it, so I know the headline story.
So basically, we won't stick on this too long. We'll get to DraftKings, but basically, Shohei Ohtani. They're saying his interpreter was $4.5 million in gambling debt. Now, this was a guy who was making $200,000 a year. So a lot of people are speculating that, okay, why would some illegal bookmaker give this guy $4.5 million of credit unless he was saying, you know, oh, no, it's me, you know, Shohei's backing me, you know, we got it, he's bankrolling me. And I mean, this could be a huge problem for the MLB.
Yeah, because
I mean, you look back at the precedent. I mean, Pete Rose got banned for lifetime. But now Shohei Ohtani is the MLB's biggest asset. I mean, he's growing the game internationally. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the MLB. So it's hard to imagine that they crack down on him the same way. I mean, if this was some other guy that had an interpreter that wasn't as big of a name and he was even, you know, connected to this at all, I feel like they'd be very quick in it. But either way, DraftKings, of course, you got March Madness going on. You had positive data after the Super Bowl with how many people bet. Price target raised to $58. The stock's been on a tear, up more than 100% this year. I'm worried about this whole industry, though, I got to say.
The thing just going on, Tony, I mean, he changed his story. I mean,
that's
the thing. So, I mean, I don't know about that. But let's just talk DraftKings. A nice move here. The stock's been just on a nice roll. An upgrade is an upgrade. It's like a price target raise. So you did get a pop here to 49.67, 68, your pre-market high. You haven't been at 50 bucks in a while. In fact, you haven't been over 50 since September of 2021. So next monthly high comes in at 51.30. If you're looking for a target, that was in October of 2021.
Kramer also featured it last night. He had some technician he was talking about, and they were bullish the stock too. And that really kickstarted it last night a bit too. Although they did say wait for a pullback to buy, which he usually says, but nobody waits for a pullback; they just rip it higher.
Yeah, and again, my from what I'm seeing, I see a lot of stuff. You know, a lot of young people have gotten into trouble now gambling on these legal apps over the last few years. My prediction is that in the next few years, I don't think they're going to make gambling illegal again. I think what you're going to see is a lot of regulation similar to like alcohol advertising and stuff where or cigarette advertising where you can't. I think we're just going to see less and less of the commercials you watch a sports game now and it's every single commercial break. It's DraftKings, FanDuel, this and that. And the leagues themselves and the media shows are all endorsing these products. So I think over time we'll see some pushback on that, but I don't think they'll fully, make it illegal now. So I don't know. I mean, again, like the companies seem to be doing well right now. I just worry about long-term, the problems that are going to arise from this industry. I love parlays too, the crow. I mean, it's fun. It's fun if you do it responsibly. It's just like trading, right? Like you don't want to go on Robinhood and go, on $50,000 worth of margin you don't have and then be down in a hole. But if you'd want to
trade, go all in on Donald Trump.
Yeah, go all in on DJT. So, interesting story to watch. Someone else, there was another gambling story. I don't want to say on the news too much, but there was a Raptors player who got caught basically gambling on himself. He actually I went to college with him, Mizzou, and I know his family, and he's a good family. So I was kind of surprised by that. And he was actually a trader. Jontay Porter, the player on the Raptors. This story broke yesterday or 2 days ago. He had like people had parlays where they were betting on his under props, so like under 3.5 rebounds, and he came into the game and then pulled himself out after 4 minutes with an eye injury, and it was all this like weird betting trends, and it's bad. I mean, it's bad for him, but he ran a Discord where he was talking about like cryptos and meme coins and all this stuff. So when I learned that, I was like, okay, maybe he's got that streak in him where he's kind of a gambler, like he wants to buy these coins or buy GameStop stock. So he actually was an investor trader. So I mean, more relation to the markets there might be a little bit more topical for us. But let's move on from the gambling as well. Let's see, where do we want to go next? Oh, let's go to Tesla next, because we have an analyst upgrade today after a few downgrades.
Mm-hmm.
Did the upgrade come in yet?
I think there was a couple. I think there was a couple ratings changes today.
Let's see. Let me get those pulled up.
I don't have an upgrade. Is there a buy rating? I'm just looking through.
Price target rating. Yeah,
Tesla maintains overweight. This is Morgan Stanley. This is Adam Jonas. 320.
If it's Morgan Stanley and a car company, then chances are it's Adam Jonas.
So Jonas is. It looked like, and I didn't read the note or anything. I'm just looking through my ratings in the pro there, but I see overweight Tesla. I see a 320 price target. We know Adam Jonas. He'll have a 320 price target, and then he'll have a bearish scenario of like an $80 price target. The guy hedges himself, so I don't know. Adam Jonas, obviously. People listen to him, though, and I mean, if he's talking bullish on Tesla here again, it'll pop up the stock a bit.
It is. Had a good day yesterday. Kind of faded near the end of the day because of that late day sell-off just following the momentum. We did get through the pair of highs at the 183 level, but faded, as I said, near the lows of the session. But looking at it, trading up, touched 180 today. I don't know. Kind of no man's land here. I'll look at yesterday's low in the close as support right now. Right next to each other, 177.38, 177.67 for Tesla.
China's just getting hammered here again. I mean, it just can't seem to get out of its own way. Every time you think Alibaba is ready, like it's looking like, oh, maybe it's perking up a bit. And I've been caught like thinking, oh, it's going to perk up here a little bit. Just continues to leak. I mean, not too far from a 52-week low for Alibaba. That Pinduoduo has been an epic disaster since the earnings report. We know in the pre-market was trading up over 150, never opened that day and came all the way back down. I've got the position in Baidu, but that couldn't hold the gains here either. They got, maybe the deal with Apple, talking about rumored deal, and that, has come back down here. What is it going to take? I just want to talk China here for a second. You know, what is it going to take to actually get a sustained rally in China stocks? Is it like just fears that they're going to go and invade Taiwan and you just can't touch it? And every time these things pop up, there's a sell? Because, you know, you get some pockets where, okay, well, this China stock's doing okay. But I mean, there's so many that are just not participating. The K-Web, you know, again, we've had a decent rally in the last couple of months, but when you give a perspective, the K-Web topped out at $97 in 2021, is now 26 bucks. I mean, it's been tough. I want to invest in China, but I mean, everything just tells me it's just been dead money for the last so many years. What makes this the year that China is actually going to start to outperform?
Yeah, I see a headline from overnight from Financial Times that Jinping tells U.S. CEOs China's growth prospects remain bright. So that's what I would actually like to see right now, Dennis, is that like I would like to see China's leadership kind of basically tell U.S. companies like, hey, look, like we still want you guys to do business here. We still want this to be a good place to do business here, because everything we've seen over the last few years, you see iPhone sales plummeting because of increased competition. You see Tesla sales plummeting because of increased competition. It seems like a much more unfriendly environment for American companies to do business in China, which I think is what's hurting you more right now than this risk about Taiwan. Because I think people have kind of, I don't want to say forgotten about that, but it's a little bit more on the back burner than it was, say, a year ago. The Taiwan risk. But I'm more worried about like, are companies just going to be saying, hey, let's not focus on China at all, because it's not helping Apple. It's not helping Tesla right now. There's too much competition over there. So if China starts coming in and saying, giving essentially US more friendly ways to do business there, then that would help. But I don't know if we're going to end up seeing that, because it seems like they're pretty gung-ho on growing their own companies and businesses.
Before we change the subject, Tim Seymour in the background here. Let's bring Tim in, because this is his area too, you know, talking Asia here. So let's bring him into this conversation. Joel! He has to mute himself. Joel, you're trying to run a professional show here. What's going on?
Let's see. Where are my mutes here?
No, not you.
It's Joel. Joel does it once every 3 days. He has like what we call OMS, old man.
Come on, Joel. Jeez.
How you doing, Tim?
Give him a good intro.
Well, I show up here with a little bit of egg on my face, because somehow, you know, the last time I was supposed to appear, you know, I don't know. There was some type of voodoo that went on, and I missed. I really apologize. This is one of my really enjoyable moments before the markets every day, let alone being here. So sorry about that, guys. Great to be here. I heard you talking about China.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I have a, we all know what the fundamentals are. We all know that the dynamics structurally around the economy are very challenged. We know that China's demographics, strangely enough, for a lot of people to learn are awful. They're not extraordinary. The things that I think are very interesting about China right now is I still believe China's playing a chess game when at times we're playing video games here. And that means that they're just moving very slow and methodically. It doesn't mean they're always right. I don't believe in the ideology at all. I do think that they are playing a long game as it relates to American investment. And for as long as they need American firms in their economy, they will have them. And they will have them on their terms, but it can be certainly mutually beneficial. I've seen this in emerging markets over my years. I certainly understand how that works until it doesn't. I think the investment rationale on China for most people that don't have to invest there is, I don't need to be in China. I'm not going to be there. People are underinvested. They're underweight. The sentiment is as bad as I've ever seen it. I think it's going higher. And I think it's going higher because I think there are a few things going on that are the more important part about this than whether they're going to throw, you know, 5 trillion yuan at their economy or not. It's things like when Tencent yesterday said that they feel the government has taken pressure off. They're actually going to be able to Tenpay. So their version of Alipay or their version of their payments dynamic. I mean, their biggest companies, especially in the tech center, have been under attack from the government, not from anywhere else. And so it's not as if the U.S. is saying, get out of our markets. It's their own country that's been putting pressure on. Tencent's announcements yesterday made me feel, and we've heard this bits and pieces, and there's been a lot of inconsistent signals. But we've heard this from Alibaba with their spinoffs. We've heard this even when Joe Tsai was brought back in at Alibaba, I think that the message was that you know, folks that even have a big presence in the West are people that are okay at these companies. So I like Tencent. I like Baba. I saw the chart of the K-Web up there. It's certainly been danced by the door. It's been a trading stock. And you know, these other, I mean, we've had probably 10 rallies of 20%+ in Alibaba in the last 2 years, and they've been then followed by probably lower lows. I look at Alibaba, that's got 40% of their market cap in cash, talking about buying back stock. I think the companies are doing what they can do. Tencent amped up their buyback yesterday. Stock had a pretty good day in the middle of a difficult day for China overall. So those are my views on China. There's a lot to not like, but I think especially as China views their capital markets, their global markets, being a money center, they believe they are, and they want that. And if you look at how they interact with the MSCI and places that really, you know, are all about institutional adoption, I mean, they've signed up to do all the right things that they need to do. So, and if you look, by the way, global funds that are allocated to China, they are back to 2013 levels of aggregate investment in China. And that's before the MSCI put in, essentially the local markets, before China joined the MSCI World and MSCI EM. And China's now 40%+ of the EM index. To say that we're back at those levels of allocation tells you just where a little bit could go a long way in terms of asset prices.
Let's take it over to the pot stocks, because this is your area of expertise as well. And some of these stocks have actually been going pretty well. I mean, I don't know how much you follow the Canadian ones. Some of the Canadian ones have really blasted off here couple of weeks. Yeah, thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, the Canadian companies love the fact that Germany essentially has removed cannabis from narcotics. I mean, Germany's kind of like quietly moved ahead of the U.S. in terms of what they're doing. They may, in fact, fully federally legalize rec. The adult market before we do as well. But if you look at Canadian firms, they spent a lot of time, you know, back in 2018 and 2017 and even 2019, you know, when the Canadian LPs market caps were 10 times what they are. That part of the story was Europe, right? Part of the story was that they, you know, especially Tilray 1.0, Tilray 1.0 was making a lot of noise about some of the deals that they had done. And some of the JVs they had with Novartis and whatnot. But ultimately, you know, Tilray 2.0 is the major distributor across Europe. They've major investments across, a couple of the key markets, including Germany. Obviously, Curaleaf in the U.S., who's made a couple acquisitions recently, has certainly made a significant investment in Germany and across Europe. I think, you know, the Canadian LP dynamic also is to the extent that where U.S. markets are going to open up, there's an argument that there's more to do for a couple of these companies. For most of them, I don't think there's a whole lot to do at all. And in fact, I still think there's more consolidation to go on in Canada. I think there's way too much capacity still, amazingly. But in cannabis, obviously, what's interesting to me about yesterday is that, you know, the headlines of Germany's move forward here are the types of headlines that would have had the market up 40% 3 years ago, 5 years ago. Market's kind of like, yeah, good news, not incredible news. Market's not rallying. Market rallied, 3 to 5%, some names a little bit more. The steady progress in terms of what I think is rescheduling in the U.S. continues, and we get a lot of comments. Clearly this is a question whether the political, what do you call that glass thing that sand that dips through it? So whatever.
Hourglass.
Hourglass. Sorry. Still haven't finished my coffee. The hourglass is ticking away on the Biden administration's status quo and their ability to really dictate the terms of this. Remember, the DEA essentially is appointed by the Biden administration. I mean, everybody involved in this circle that has to bring cannabis into a rescheduling environment. Now, meanwhile, a couple of the cannabis companies have already announced that they've received IRS refunds and that they're well on their way to actually, essentially removing, if not, synthetically or in advance of a change in 280E and taxation on the sector. The profitability, the free cash flow for the sector gets better and better. The biggest issue for the sector right now is that it can't be institutionally owned properly. And that means that, yeah, hedge funds can own it plenty. You know, there's obviously a couple of the companies like TerrAscend and Curaleaf that have listed up in Toronto, world-class exchange. I can just tell you from you know, I run a cannabis ETF, CNBS, and from just the portfolio construction for me, my compliance people, once I was able to own Curaleaf in Toronto, you know, the key was really they didn't need to know anything else other than it was listed on the TSX. That immediately meant check, we're good. And so, you know, in terms of owning the sector, even dedicated funds like mine have had issues, have had significant issues. I own most of my US exposure via swap. That's fine. It works. It works just as well. But for a lot of institutions, that's the issue. So I think, you know, the slow march of positive headlines will continue. We're not necessarily dependent on Washington for anything. Those are very important elements of investment in the sector. But as we've seen over the last couple of quarters, the companies are actually, you know, we hear about Facebook and the year of efficiency. It's been like the 3 years of efficiency in cannabis. And I think the companies are better run. But, you know, we've heard from Trulieve, they've gotten tax refunds. We've heard from other companies. We see what's potentially going on rescheduling. We see what's going on in terms of the global adoption. This is a global economy in cannabis. And meanwhile, in the US, the steady kind of march of state by state, including probably the most recent and significant one, which is Ohio, which is arguably a red state. You know, that the more red states go to Washington with cannabis having been, you know, essentially the adult markets having been opened up, let alone the medical markets are one thing, but I just think that the state by state progress here is part of why over the medium to long term, there's no question about what's happening here. There's no question where it's eventually going to go. Investors that are here now are certainly going to be rewarded. Not every company is worth owning. And a lot of companies have completely, you know, really blown up their balance sheets to stay alive. And that means that they're, you know, and I urge investors, this is what we do too. You have to look at the caps. Structure the cap stack, understand where there's, you know, 4 billion warrants that are coming online, just 20% up. You know, there's a lot of different elements of investing here that are not what meets the eye. Like, oh, these companies seem cheap on a, you know, on an EV EBITDA. Some of them are cheap, but some of them, if you actually look at the full dilution, are not cheap at all. So exciting times in cannabis. We had Boris Jordan from Curaleaf on Fast Money last night. Always a great conversation with Boris. One of the things I said was, hey, Boris, you know, your stock didn't really move today. And that's not like the kind of question I like to ask. And it wasn't that I was trying to kind of dig at him. I was purely pointing that I actually think in its own way, it's actually good news. I think there are things happening in the cannabis space that are actually really positive, really fundamental and material that a lot of people outside the sector aren't paying attention to. And the fact that the industry's not moving 10 or 20 or 30% on those days, I actually take it as a positive.
Is there a path to profitability for any of these companies? Like a path, because I think you'd get like more institutional, you know, interest here if these stocks actually started showing profits here, which, you know, they've struggled to do for a long time. Is there a path to profitability on some of these companies?
So, I mean, first of all, they are showing profitability right now. They're showing profitability.
Okay, so we're getting there
in absolute terms and in real terms. But then the adjusted profitability, which is a function of this 280E taxation, will change, you know, remarkably the profitability of the sector. But you're bringing up a really important point. There's a lot of institutions out there for the last 3 years have come to me and said, Tim, I can own cannabis at my hedge fund. Or there are institutional investors that can own cannabis. But they say, you know what, my biggest issue is I'm not even sure what multiple I'm looking at. Like what,
no.
You know,
yeah.
I can't tell you what really the growth multiple should be on this. Is it actually a lot cheaper than consumer staples? I think it's cheaper than consumer discretionary. What category do I put it in? So I think the investable kind of analysis profile of cannabis has been a challenge for traditional investors who want to own it, but who still, you know, they don't need to worry about missing the first 20 or 80%, right? And I don't think they do, because I think they're going to get it. So, you know, the size of the marketplace, the addressable market, it's all over the map in terms of what people are willing to call it. Maybe one of the biggest problems with cannabis is the illicit market. There's no question. As I walk, you know, to my office today, and I see 25 illegal pot shops, and you know, I
in New York City, right?
Yeah, New York City. And And look, I mean, I'll get a ticket for jaywalking, but they won't hassle these guys. I own a bar downtown, WXOU Radio Bar, which is a pretty cool little place. And if I tried to open without a liquor license, I'd be shut down so fast. I mean, so it's fast. Extraordinary to me that community boards that have a disproportionate weight in terms of what kind of, really what kind of commerce goes on within their boundaries. And there's seven or eight, community boards that around Manhattan. But I mean, the fact that these illicit shops have been able to exist, especially in a world where we really are truly worried about, fentanyl and all the legal influences that really are the reason why cannabis, it's great that it's coming, out of the alleys into real stores and being treated the way it should be treated. So,
hey, Tim, yeah. I want to shift gears here real quick before we let you go. I know you got a busy schedule here, a lot of things going on in this market, but I think everything is predicated on what the Fed is going to do. We get some inflation data on Friday. Powell speaking on Friday where the markets are closed. You made a very interesting observation. If rates are supposed to be going down, right, why are yields rising despite all these expectations? Maybe we're not going to get those three cuts. What do you think about that, Tim?
That's the conversation we've been having for a couple of weeks, for a few weeks on Fast Money. I'm not sure we will. I think we have inflationary forces. We all, done the work on services inflation and whatnot. I mean, I think there's some real issues here. I also think that the Fed last week did a terrible job of managing expectations. They basically said, we're going to cut no matter what. And I'm not sure that they should be. I look at financial conditions and they're off the charts. Now, there are some things lurking that would have me concerned. And I do think asset prices, the BOE said some really interesting things today about they see a real threat to asset prices. I do too. I think commercial real estate is a massive issue that dwarfs subprime, by the way, that people just don't really understand. It's not just the regional banks with their exposure. It's how about all these other, institutes? How about the pension funds? How about the endowments? How about, a lot of Main Street that owns this stuff and they don't even know they own it? So I think that the Fed really needs to hold the line here. And either way, I'll just take it back to New York City. I know what's going on with commercial real estate here. And I know how that's also feeding into residential real estate. And then you have some of these just, demographic patterns that continue. I think they're probably overdone, by the way, of like New Yorkers moving to Texas and Florida and people from Chicago moving to Texas and Florida and California. My buddy lives in Houston, sent me a hat the other day that said, get your California out of my Texas. And I said, dude, I'm in New York, man. I mean, you probably don't like us either. And he said, no, we like the New Yorkers. We hate the people from California. Sorry about that, Sunshine. Golden State. But I mean, that's what they say in Texas. Anyway, it's all about the Fed. Everybody says this is all about AI. No, it's all about the Fed. And I think we have, I try to be a lot more, call it pragmatic, with the view I have on the equity market, which is the equity market I have right now, I think is going to continue to go higher. And I think there are places to allocate. The broader economy is industrial names, transports, energy, healthcare, utilities. I mean, I think a lot of these companies have been in 2-year bear markets and they look kind of interesting here. So I know I'm running on here. So
the market's held up when rates went from 0 to 5%. Right. And we've come down. If we come down, I mean, who says? I mean, you can't. The market performed so well in that environment. You did give a sector here. You said industrials. Is there any other sectors that you are radar? Maybe. What about the whole small cap thing? Everyone's waiting for that catch up trade.
I get a lot of hate mail because I've said a couple of times in the last month or two when someone's come on and talked about small caps. And I don't know why we spend so much time focused on small caps. I mean, I understand there's a market there, and I understand there's a lot of money to be made, but. But I don't really care about small.
They're small for a reason, right?
You're saying, though, it's all institutional money. Like, this has been the problem with small caps for years here now. It's like, why bother when I got the NVIDIAs and I got the Microsofts and I got, you know, it was always Apple, but it's not Apple right now. I mean, why bother with the small caps? You know, nobody's talking about them in the media. Nobody's, you know, and again, so what you're saying is so typical. How do we change that mindset? Like if we're going to have a small cap, like catch-up trade here, we need that mindset to change. I don't know if it does.
But the small cap catch-up trade is you might as well allocate to a mid-sized, you know, a mid-cap growth company, because I just feel like, look, you're diversified. You own the IWM, you're diversified. That's great. I often have used the IWM historically as a hedge against growth sectors, especially in emerging markets. It's often been, you're kind of one brain cell hedges. Let me short the IWM against owning some other growth stuff, because obviously it is more tethered to a growth dynamic. But, so the hate mail will keep coming, because I respect the analysis of what performance in small caps means to the broader market. But I think, again, there's a capacity issue for investing in small caps for a lot of institutions. They don't even bother. Why would they bother? But I understand why we talk about it. I just don't care.
All right. Well, we've been on the line with Tim Seymour. Tim, we you and I met last year at the Cannabis Capital Conference at Benzinga, and you gave me some great tips for being on air, on camera. Of course, you see Tim on CNBC Fast Money all the time. So if I do anything well on this show, I'm on camera, it's because of Tim's advice. If I do anything not so well, it's because I'm not following his advice. So, Tim, I appreciate it.
One of the first things I probably taught you is to be humble and to acknowledge that there are a lot of people out there doing great things. You guys are doing great things. And I hope we're actually going to have a little preview conversation before that conference in Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, Florida, April 16th and 17th, because that's going to be a really exciting event. And, you know, we can drill a little bit deeper into cannabis going into that. But it was great to meet you. And, you know, I bet I gave you tips on hockey, and I bet I was right. I probably talked about the Rangers, you know, making a run at the President's Cup.
First team to clinch officially yesterday.
It takes the game 72, one of the best seasons we've ever had in the regular season. And this is why the NHL is amazing. It's why, you know, I don't care whether you're a hockey fan or not. When the NHL playoffs are coming up, you're going to have 16 teams. Eight in each conference. I'm telling you, each one of those first round playoff series is going to be epic. It's incredible what's going on. So love me some hockey. Rangers clinched last night in a wild game against the Flyers, who are playing pretty good hockey this year.
Yeah, they are.
Even though they're Philly.
I hope my wings can sneak in there. They're trying. They're just like
they're teetering. They lost last night, but
I thought they were a given a month ago.
Dylan Larkin got hurt. But I'll tell you one thing. I mean, you admire a lot of different athletes. I mean, those hockey players. I mean, they're out there for a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and I mean, just full tilt. I mean, they may even be in better shape than swimmers, and I think that might be a little stretch.
Well, they're better shape than me, and I can tell you that I love Patrick Kane, and it's great to see him. Even just the influence he has, he's a legend, and I think the Leafs are doing all the right things. It's interesting. It's a young team. There's a lot of talent there, and it's not surprising. It's all the cliches. You know, you kind of see younger teams that have the struggle right now. They struggle also really understanding, you know, younger guys, even where maybe they've burnt through all their reserve tanks of energy and whatnot. This part of the season, it's a long season, but Wings are on the right path. And you got to watch that 30 for 30 on the Avalanche and the Wings.
Incredible.
It is so good. And whether you're a hockey fan or not, that's must watch TV.
Awesome. Well, we've been on the line again with Tim Seymour, CNBC's Fast Money. He will be at Benzinga's Cannabis Conference moderating a panel on valuation variances, determining worth in the cannabis space. Like you said, Tim, we might have to bring you back on for a quick preview right before that. But, you know, we know you're a busy guy. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here.
No, thank you. Thank you for coming on. All right, guys. Again, Tim Seymour. Shout out, Tim. Great guy. Like I said, met him last year at the Cannabis Conference, was giving me all sorts of tips and really, I mean, took the time to do it, which I can't appreciate enough. So thank you again, Tim. But all right, guys, it's 9:10. We've kept long enough. We'll go ahead and wrap up today's show. We do have Benzinga Live Trading starting up right after this. Should be another exciting day in the market. You got DJT trading. You got GameStop. Everything going on. So we'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow too, 8 a.m. Joel, who do we got coming on tomorrow?
Well, it doesn't look like I'll be walking on my hands down to the office because it doesn't look like Merck's going to open at 1:33. So keep an eye on it.
Oh, you're going to be okay.
Might not even open at 1:33.
Let me give you an opening imbalance for it. It's 17,000 to buy. Projected opening at this time is 128.99.
Uh-huh.
Again, change. Yeah, but the when you're 9:11, the projected opening doesn't mean much. I mean, you know, this is like information that the pros are using. I mean, when you're sitting here on a brokerage and you don't have, you know, like I can look at, you know, how many buy orders are out there. I can look at, you know, where it's projected. So right now, information coming directly from the floor. The projected opening is 128.99, but that doesn't mean much. It's probably going to be more buyers come in and they'll push that projected opening up. All that is saying is if it opened right now, it would open at 128.99 with all the opening order flow. So some more buy orders will come in, probably push that up. But you know what naturally happens is people sell it in the pre-market. They think it's going to, you know, come down to that price. And then, you know, they short in the pre-market and they turn around, they come up to buy. And that's what brings up that opening price. I think it'll open above 130.
Yes.
But you're right, Joel. There's probably some size there at 130. Maybe this is going to be a 130 open for Merck.
What about all those other levels? What about the half and the whole levels going all the way
not
up?
On Merck as much.
And, no?
I think it's more, you got it right with the big, you know, the big number, like 130. Okay. I bet you there's some size sitting there, you know, at 130. And I got cheap and unsubscribed from my book, or I could actually tell you that. But just because the New York book just didn't seem worth the $60 a month anymore. I just wasn't getting very many trades from it at all. But 130 is probably size there.
And just market, I mean, we're just floating up here, right back up to the top of yesterday's range. So keep an eye on that. That comes in. The Globex high was above that, but potential resistance here at the 5295 area. That was your intraday high from yesterday. Coming back on the downside, you're a long ways from unchanged. So maybe perhaps keep an eye mid-range in the session. If we do go into a decline, Mark Chaykin joining us tomorrow to end the week. I hope you guys enjoyed this extended PMP. So we will be back with you guys tomorrow morning.
Much like overtime hockey, you instead of, you know, free hockey, you got free PMP, an extra 13 minutes. But now we'll let you guys get on with the day. Go to Benzinga Live Trade, and we'll see you guys tomorrow, 8 a.m.